It is the latest source of tension between the United States and China. President Joe Biden is accused of weaponizing technology for imposing sweeping controls on sales of semiconductors to Beijing. What's behind this decision and how much is it down to politics? This is Inside Story. Hello, welcome to the program. I'm Hazem Seeker. Technology is the latest sector to be affected by tensions between the U.S. and China. Washington has imposed sweeping controls on exports of semiconductors, also known as microchips, to Beijing. American companies will be restricted from selling advanced chips to China and supplying Chinese firms with tools to make their own. The Department of Commerce says it is to prevent sensitive technologies from falling into the hands of China's military, intelligence, and security services. The U.S. has been trying to boost its own semiconductor industry. In August, President Joe Biden approved $52 billion in federal subsidies for new manufacturing plants and research.
China is trying to move ahead of us in manufacturing them. It's no wonder, literally, the Chinese Communist Party actively lobbied against the Chips and Science Act that I've been pushing in the United States Congress. The Communist Party of China was lobbying in the United States Congress against passage of this legislation. And unfortunately, some of our friends in the other team bought it. The United States has to lead the world in producing these advanced chips. This law is going to make sure that it will.
Well, China has accused the U.S. of using science and technology as a political weapon.
Out of the need to maintain its sci-tech hegemony, the U.S. abuses export control measures to maliciously block and suppress Chinese companies. This practice deviates from the principle of fair competition and violates international economic and trade rules. It will not only damage the legitimate rights and interests of Chinese companies, but also affect American companies' interests.
Now let's take a closer look at why semiconductors are important to global manufacturing. Also known as semis or chips, semiconductors are needed to run nearly everything that has an electronic component, from smartphones to cars and military equipment. The global semiconductor market was valued at about $595 billion in 2021 and is expected to become a trillion-dollar industry by 2030. The countries producing the most semiconductors are China, India, and the U.S. But technologically, all trail Taiwan. That is the most advanced. It makes 65% of the world's chips and nearly 90% of the most advanced. Well, let's bring in our guest now to talk more about this. From Dubai, we have Vasuki Shastri, an associate fellow in the Asia-Pacific program of Chatham House. From Shanghai, Dan Wang, a chief economist at Hang Seng Bank, China. And from London, Yang Wang, a senior analyst at Counterpoint, that is a global technology market research firm. Good to have you all with us. So, Vasuki, if I could start with you, what's the thinking behind this decision by the U.S. in terms of putting the pressure on China?
I think one should look at the historical perspective where these export controls have been used by the U.S., essentially dating back to the Cold War, right? So you've had export controls mainly targeted at the former Soviet Union in the 1950s, 60s, and 70s, which were mainly aimed at stemming any advances that the Soviet Union could make in the arms race that was underway during the Cold War. Obviously, the geopolitical context has changed in this era. And the primary U.S. motivation and, you know, last Friday's decision comes on top of many, many other decisions taken in the last 2 to 3 years, a recognition by successive administrations that we are now in a technological race. And component of that, of course, is an arms race. And primacy of, you know, developing these advanced computing capabilities, of which, you know, the semiconductors really are enablers of these technologies. Whoever is able to master this will have a huge technological edge over the competitor. And in this case, obviously, the US is thinking mainly of China, right? And one has seen a lot of narrative that these export controls are somewhat new. That's absolutely not true. And also, if you look at it purely from the perspective of a nation state trying to protect its technological edge, so the US is well within its rights to impose these export controls. And obviously, they are extraterritorial in reach, in the sense that US allies who have access to these technologies will not be able to transfer them over to China. Right? So that's the technical trade conception of why this has been designed the way it has been designed. Obviously, there's a huge geopolitical context to this. You mentioned Taiwan earlier. Taiwan is clearly the hub for global semiconductor production. And, you know, any country that is able, first of all, to protect its flanks at home, to make sure that the technologies it produces does not get transferred, in this case, to China. The second element of this really is to make sure that the Taiwanese manufacturers of these semiconductors lean more towards the US side than the Chinese side. And this is going to be a delicate diplomatic dance as it unfolds over the next 5 years or so.
Dan Wang, how do you expect China to react to this? They've already said that this is that the U.S. is kind of throwing its weight around here in the semiconductor market by using it as a political weapon. But how do you expect China to how do you expect them to respond to this?
Well, China has been well aware of the technological decoupling with the U.S. for a long time. So it has been redoubling its effort to be self-sufficient in chip manufacturing. And from this point on, we can definitely expect two fronts that will be taken by the Chinese government. One is on the financing of the chip industry in China. They already got huge financial support, mostly from the city and provincial government, but the central government has been supporting a large fund trying to develop the semiconductor sector. And the second one is about talents. In the past decade, China has been hiring very aggressively from Taiwan, especially from the TSMC, to replenish its talent in terms of entrepreneurs, engineers, to develop its domestic sector. But at this point, there has been a bottleneck. In the past 3 years, the labor mobility inflow into China has been significantly slowed. And the economics prospect for China has also been much dimmer than before. So there has been some shaking confidence about where China can go from this point. If it can keep up its openness in the coming years, then I still believe there is a chance that China can develop quite fast about its domestic ability to produce chips.
Yang Wang, do you share that perspective? I mean, the intention here by the United States is to try and set Chinese chip makers back by years. Could they do that?
Well, I think the measures that we have seen since last week definitely, well, you could definitely see the rationale behind the U.S. administration. You look at this from an angle from not just the measures last week, but a slew of policies in recent years. You start with what we call the tech war, starting from a ban on Huawei ZTE equipment in 2018, and more recently, more severe curbs on the Chinese tech industry, and more recently, restrictions on export of U.S. semiconductors. And in the policies from last week, we could see even further granularization of some of the restrictions. And this one includes the sale of semiconductor manufacturing equipment, as well as restrictions on personnel exchanges. So we could say that the policies have been fairly consistent, and that the U.S. administration is really flexing its muscle and looking deeper into where the values lie in the semiconductor supply chain. One could say that they are landing the punches as where they intend to, and the purpose of it is, ensuring supremacy of U.S. leading-edge technology and manufacturing, but also to kneecap China's technological development.
Vasuki Shastri, is there a danger that this move could ignite tensions further between China and the United States?
I mean, I think that's a baseline expectation that this is part of a continuing saga that is going to unfold in the next few years. It is the greatest drama in town, watching both the US and China attempting to gain technological supremacy in all of these new areas, you know, artificial intelligence, machine learning, which is what these semiconductors and advanced computing capabilities are going to enable. So the question is, are there global rules of the road which will enable the US and China to come together, you know, almost like a trade agreement on these sensitive technological items? And, you know, the room for that seems very, very limited. In fact, on the global trading front, there's very little consensus amongst members of the WTO to come to any kind of agreement on the global rules of the road. You know, they've tried for many times in Doha over the past three decades and have not succeeded. So it's very difficult to see anyone defining these transfers of technology as constituting normal, you know, exchange of trade of goods and services between countries. And the US really is using its sovereign exception in this case. So, you know, tensions are absolutely going to rise. They're going to rise not only in this narrow field of semiconductors, but it is going to have ripple effects elsewhere. And, you know, one should really closely watch developments in Taiwan, which, you know, in any case got aggravated after the Nancy Pelosi visit a few months ago.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit more about Taiwan. We mentioned at the top there how pivotal Taiwan is to the semiconductor industry. It's essentially cornered the market on semiconductors. Dan Wang, what's Taiwan's role going to be in all of this, given the close relations it has with the United States and the fact that China considers Taiwan a renegade province? But there is an understanding there that China doesn't want to put too much pressure on Taiwan because of its dependence, the dependence that it has on Taiwan's semiconductors.
Well, when it comes to the chip manufacturing, China absolutely rely on imports. And Taiwan has been a major source of advanced chips for mainland China. And when we look at the competition between US and China, everybody is very clear about what the end game is. It's basically the transformative technology in the future. And China wants to transition its economy from an investment-led economy to a consumer-based economy. Things like e-commerce, smartphones, online payment, or even digital money has become very important. Chips, which China cannot make, and mostly only can be made by TSMC, would be essential in this transition. And recently, we have seen more tech restrictions from the US, and that's partly triggered by some breakthrough of the Chinese company, because some Chinese company has been able, SMIC specifically, has been able to get in close to make its own 7-nanometer chips. And previously, it was already able to make the 14-nanometer chips at a reasonable scale. So one can only anticipate more tech restrictions on China. Right now, the Biden administration is very clear on getting more aligned with its allies, including Europe, including Taiwan, in order to curb their chip exports to China. And what's going to happen next really depend on how much more that the Biden administration is willing to do. And on the China side, the only thing that we can anticipate for sure is that it will definitely provide more financing, more policy support, and absolutely more talent support for its domestic chip industry.
Yang Wang, what's your take on the implications of all of this for Taiwan?
Well, certainly Taiwan is in a very tight spot we have seen for the past couple of years the geopolitical tensions, and also that had and also due to COVID, there were some ripple effects over the supply chain. COVID disruptions definitely had some huge impact to our industry. Case in point, some car manufacturers were running half of their normal manufacturing capacity. So globally, there's huge demand for the products that come out of TSMC's fabs in Taiwan. Now, TSMC is a global company. The reason that it exists is that it tries to take a neutral stance and collaborate with all the other partners. The semiconductor value chain, it's extremely long. It's a very specialized area, all the way from materials, design, IP, equipment, manufacturing, packaging. So the reason that TSMC has succeeded is not only the R&D expertise, but also in an open collaboration, an attitude it had with customers. So basically what we are looking at is TSMC and some of the supply chain companies in Taiwan really being squeezed from non-market forces. They really have to take very difficult decisions whether to align with the US-driven policies as well as catering to their markets, because being located in Taiwan and close to some of the biggest customers in Japan, in Korea, and in China really benefited them. So if it were come to a place that they had to move some of the assets to other places, it really could be a logistic and financial challenge for them. I'm not saying that they will not do it, but definitely it is one of the concerns for their management.
Yeah, Vasuki, I mean, as Yang was saying there, there's a lot of interconnecting parts to the semiconductor industry. And if this policy is going to be, this policy from the US is going to be effective, it needs everybody to do their part, so to speak. That means other countries allied with the US, other foreign companies to go along with what the US is trying to do. How essential is that for this to work?
Well, the U.S. has already introduced a framework which would make this decoupling a reality. And I'm referring here to the Indo-Pacific Economic Framework, of which there are 12 or 13 signatory countries. Digital cooperation is one of the pillars of the IPEF. So, you know, the American position on this is they absolutely would like to share these advanced computing capabilities with allies on very, very strict conditions that access to this information should not be shared with the Chinese. And, you know, embedded in this IPEF, obviously it's not only focused on intellectual property and digital issues. There's also a trade pillar. We'll wait and see how this trade pillar, whether it morphs into a regional free trade agreement like the CPTPP, a bit early to speculate on that. But I think the US geostrategic position on this is obviously to rally and mobilize a group of allies, not only in Asia, but obviously in Europe, in the context of Russia and Ukraine, we're already beginning to see that. In order to build this coalition, which has many planks, technology and semiconductors being one of them. And it is this very broad strategic approach that the US hopes will help it gain a technological edge over a period of time, over what it regards as inroads made by China over the past decade, and also accusations about intellectual property theft. So they're essentially taking a cohesive approach in order to address this.
Let's just take a step back from this for a moment, because a lot of people I know will be wondering, what is this all going to mean for things like personal devices, phones and other electronic devices, that sort of thing? You know, we talked a lot about military hardware, but how is this going to or is it going to affect at all our daily use of these devices and getting the most advanced one next year and the year after that? Let me put that to you, Yang Wang.
Right. There certainly is a concern, given that we have under our watch a sort of a development of two different standards. And in terms of the consumer market, I would say in the short to medium term that it is not as a big issue as expected, because in the short term, looking at the semiconductor and global consumer tech industry, we are now in a downturn. As we can see from the global macroeconomic environment, inflation globally and consumer spending being squeezed, energy prices increasing. So we have already seen some key consumer electronics companies coming out with earnings revisions, CapEx cuts and hiring freezes, which all point to the fact that the market is heading to a downturn. And semiconductors, being the enabler of global consumer technology, invariably will feel the pain too. Now, so in the short term, what we are looking at in this in the scheme of the policy, reducing demand, reducing supply. But we are also facing a much more rapid reduction in demand. So in the short to medium term, we are unlikely to see a significant change, or at least as much as we experienced during COVID times. Now, but in the medium to long term, that definitely would be something to think about, because as I mentioned, if companies are having to make decisions to move their assets, capacities, and personnel around, it is almost a break from where the current ways of doing things. They need to change their operating patterns. And there will be financial as well as operational costs involved in them. And by the nature of the semiconductor and tech value chain in general, it is a very long chain, and a lot of things need to go right, and not many things... a lot of things could also go wrong. It is already fragile, as we've seen in the past couple of years. We definitely can have higher risks coming to the market in the next few years.
All right. Dan Wang, what effect do you think this is going to have on consumers?
Well, we have to remember that the U.S. didn't deny China's access for all chips. It only when it comes to the most advanced chips that will go in smartphones like iPhone or self-driving vehicles, that's where the export ban happened. So at this point, China is able to increase actually its global sale and global share of the chips.
Vasuki, what effect do you think this is going to have on personal technology?
Yeah, I think, you know, we've focused a lot on hardware. And I agree that on the hardware, things are probably not going to change for the next few years. But I think on digital standards and software, we're already seeing a decoupling between Chinese standards and the rest of the world. And, you know, that is going to have a profound impact in the way we consume technologies and in the way the Chinese are going to consume technologies. And of course, you know, both these competing systems will be built on cutting-edge hardware and software, but they're going to have very, very different philosophies and operating systems. That reflects, of course, why the US and China are involved in these tensions in the first place. So this decoupling of standards would essentially mean that, you know, the world that we've lived in over the past few years, where it's been seamless, frictionless, where we've been able to move from one country to the other with a single operating system, that essentially is going to break down. And this is what the American moves over the past week essentially suggest.
All right. On that, we will have to leave it. Thank you very much to all three of you, Vasuki Shastri, Dan Wang, and Yang Wang. Thanks very much for being on Inside Story. And thank you, as always, for watching. Remember, you can see this program again anytime. Just go to our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle there is @AJInsideStory. From me, Hazem Sika, and the whole team here. Bye for now.